שעודו לבו יסנו והיא שעודו לבו יסנו ולא נו שלא יחוד בלבות ומד עולנו לכאן יסנו ומד עולנו לכאן יסנו
והיא שעמדה לבותינו והיא שעמדה לבותינו ולנו שלא אחד בלבד עמד עלינו לחלותינו עמד עלינו לחלותינו
הקודש בו
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming. First of all, I just want to announce tomorrow there's going to be, I'll announce it again at the end. Tomorrow we're going to have a very special shiur here tonight, same time, 8 o'clock. And this is going to be given by Mr. Tzvika Reisman, a noted author of the book The Wisdom in the Hebrew Months. It's going to be a fascinating shiur about Hanukkah and about the month of Kislev. And so I hope you all can come, tell friends about it. It's going to be for men and women again tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The other, I also would like to thank the Letterman family, Mrs. Letterman and Stevie Letterman, for sponsoring tonight's shiur. This is in honor of Martin Letterman's birthday. May Hashem give him Mashnas Bracha Natzlacha, a year of blessings and success, and health and wealth, and many have many, 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 many more birthdays to celebrate with his family and nachas from his children, and just joy and happiness for all time. That was the shiur and the CD this week. The this week's parsha is Parshas Vayishlach. We read about Yaakov, our father Yaakov, returning from the land of Haran. When he was coming back from this period of exile away from his homeland, and now he's returning back to the land of Israel, to the land of his fathers. It was a turbulent journey. The Torah tells us how he was pursued first by Laban. He was out to kill him and his entire family. And then when he was finally safe from Laban, he encountered Esav. Esav with 400 men, with drawn swords. And they were up to no good. And then we have him wrestling with the Malach of Esav, the angel of Esav, all night long in a fierce battle, and an injury that he sustained, an injury to his hip, to his thigh that was dislocated. So it was a very, very, very difficult time. Yaakov, however, emerged safe and healthy. And the verse says, at the conclusion, that he says like this, Vayava Yaakov Sholem Irshchem, that Yaakov came complete to the city of Shechem. He was complete, he was whole. What, he settled in the city of Shechem, back in the land of Israel. Now on the word Shalem, that Yaakov came complete to Shechem, Rashi says, what does it mean he was complete? So he says he was complete in three things. He was Shalem Begufay, he was complete with his body, even though he had been injured in his all-night duel with the Malach, with the angel of Esav, and he had an injury on his hip and he was limping, but by the time he got to Shechem, it was gone. He was completely healed from his limp. Shalom b'memoinoi, he was complete, financially complete and whole. He didn't lose, because we read when he met with Esav, he sent a huge bribe in order to appease his brother Esav. 20 heads of cattle. Big gift, as the Torah now enumerates, of all the different things, different types of animals that he sent to the to Esav. So the Torah says that, so Rashi says, Shalem, he was complete, because all this was restored to him. Whatever he lost, he made it back. And he wasn't losing any of his, he didn't have any loss, financial loss, from the great gift that he had to send to Esav. And lastly, Shalom b'Torasi. Yaakov was complete in his Torah. Even though he spent 20 years in the house of Lavan, and the place where he couldn't study any Torah, he was spiritually challenged in the darkness of Haran. Nevertheless, Yaakov came and he didn't forget anything from the Torah. The vast knowledge that he had accumulated for 75 years, that he sat segregated and separated from the rest of the world in the tents of study, in the yeshivas of Sheim Ve'ever. Nothing. He didn't forget one iota, one bit. In the 20 years that he couldn't learn and he couldn't study, he was complete in his memory and all that knowledge, all the Torah wisdom, it was all with him. Didn't lose a thing. And that's the meaning of the word Shalem. Complete. Unscathed, unharmed by this difficult period in his life. Now, that's Rashi's explanation on the word Shalem. We generally know that, by principle, Rashi, and his comment, the greatest commentator on the Chumash, always explains everything based on the most simple interpretation. It's only when the simple interpretation doesn't work, so then he veers off and explains something according to the Medrash. Medrash is the less simplistic explanation. And over here, if we're thinking about what would be the simple meaning of what the Torah is trying to tell us, when it says Vayava Yaakov Shalem, that Yaakov came complete to the city of Shechem, unharmed to the city of Shechem, what would we think? It's the first thought that comes to mind. Well, Yaakov just had a near-death experience. Yaakov was so close to the end. As Rashi himself comments in the following Rashi, in the same pasuk, when it says that he came Padan Aram from Padan Aram, Rashi says, because Yaakov came out from the teeth of the lion. Lavan and Esav, the teeth of the lion. Not from the lion's den. From the teeth of the lion. It wasn't one lion, it was two lions. He spent 20 years in the den with the lion of Lavan, a notorious crook and swindler, who was bent on destroying him. And Yaakov came out, unharmed, healthy and wealthy. Then, when he was done with the first lion, he encountered the second lion, Esav. And he was literally between the teeth of Esav, not figuratively, but literally. Esav had opened up his huge jaw
and locked his teeth on Yaakov's neck. And he was ready to sink his teeth in and kill him on the spot. Miraculously, Yaakov was saved. Either because his neck turned hard, as Rashi says, like stone, or because miraculously Esav had a change of heart. And in the end, he kissed him. But whatever it is, Yaakov was seconds from death, or an inch from death, and he survived. So that's the obvious meaning of the word shalem, complete. So why does Rashi look for some other interpretation? That shalem means, why does the Torah tell us he was complete? Well, he didn't not lose anything. He was healed from his injury to his thigh, which was as a result of his fight with the Malach, and that he didn't lose anything of the money that he got from the sent for the gift to Esav. These are all secondary explanations. These are less than the simple interpretation. What's wrong with just saying shalom, he was complete? Now, true, as we said earlier, this is based on a passage in the Talmud. The Talmud says this, and the Medrash also says this. But again, that's the Medrash. The Medrash explains things in a less simplistic manner, and the Talmud also. But Rashi sticks to the Pshat. Why would Rashi do that? The other thing is the Midrash that does bring that these things, the meaning that Shalem means that Yaakov was complete and all these various different things. The Midrash adds one more thing. That Yaakov was also complete in his family, whole in his family. That none of his family members were harmed and injured. When we read the beginning of the Torah portion, we find how Yaakov is petrified. He is trembling in fear of the encounter with Esav. And he goes and he divides his family into two machanas, into two camps. And he says as follows, that if Esav is going to come and he's going to harm one machne, he's going to attack one camp, then at least the other half of the family is going to be spared. Can you imagine a person, a father, having to split his children, thinking that one part of his family is going to be annihilated? And then we find Yaakov arriving to the city of Shechem, and he's complete with his family. 12 children, his 11 sons, and his one daughter. No one was harmed. Beautiful. So we understand. Vayave Yaakov Shalem. We understand the meaning of that Yaakov came Shalem complete. That this is one of the things that he was completed. He was complete and that his family wasn't harmed. So then the question is, why doesn't Rashi say that? That Yaakov was also complete with his family and his family wasn't harmed. Why does he omit that when the Medrash does say that? So it's obviously one of the important things in Yaakov's life that his family wasn't harmed. When we read at the beginning, when Yaakov was going down to Haran, last week in the parasha, we find that the Torah tells us that on his way down, Yaakov had a dream. And in his dream, God appeared to him. And Hashem tells him, you have nothing to worry. I'm going to protect you. Hine anoichi imach. I am with you. Ushmarticha, and I'm going to protect you in this journey and in the way in where you're going. So Hashem is offering his protection. And Hashem is telling Yaakov, you have nothing to fear. You have nothing to be afraid. I am guarding you and I am protecting you. So we understand. If Yaakov has the explicit protection and Hashem's promise to him that I'm going to guard you and I'm going to watch over you, Yaakov has nothing to worry. He has nothing to worry from love on of Esav. Yes, it's going to be very challenging. And there are going to be moments of extreme danger. But God tells him, it's the word of Hashem. It's a promise made by Hashem that I am going to protect you. You can be assured that nothing is going to happen to you. So then we know that we don't even have to read the rest of the story. Just by knowing, once we have Hashem's promise to Yaakov, we know that Yaakov is going to emerge okay. Because on Hashem, there is no questions. If he have a promise, then that's the way it's going to be. We find, just interesting, I once heard something. A few weeks ago, we read about in Parshas, where is it? Parshas Vayera. So there's a Haftorah. The Haftorah of Parshas Vayera is about a woman that didn't have any children, and she spoke to the Navi Elisha that he should bless her with a child. And the Navi gives her a blessing, she has a child, and then when the child is 2 years old, the child got sick and he dies. So the mother is, of course, horrified, and instantly she sends for the prophet. So she sends a messenger to go call the prophet. And then the prophet comes back, Elisha, and he resurrects the child. That's the story. Now, in the reading of this Haftorah, we know there are two, that you, if you look inside Haftorah, you see that there is a different minhag, in the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim. When they read this, the Ashkenazim read the whole story. They read till the end. That when the Navi came and he resurrected the child. The Sfaradim read only till the part, the child died, and then the mother sent someone to get the Navi. Doesn't say the rest of the story. So I once heard someone explain, it was just a nice explanation. He says in general, Sfaradim have a natural faith, stronger than we see by the Ashkenazic Jews. Ashkenazic Jews have a little more skepticism. The Amunah is stronger. That's why you find even Jews that are so unaffiliated, Jews of a Sephardic background, have more of a sensitivity and a natural draw, easier to get them to do a mitzvah and the like. An Ashkenazic Jew is a little tougher. So by the Sephardim, no problem. Especially the Amunah and Tzadikim, the Amunah in the Torah scholars and in the great rabbis and in the prophets. So if we know that she sent to call for the Navi, so for the Sephardic Jew, that's enough. Done. Fine. We know everything is fine. There's nothing to talk about. It's okay. The Ashkenaz Jew has to read the rest of the story. He wants to know what's going to happen. Is he going to come? And he has to see the rest. Now, this is even in God, even in a promise given by tzaddikim. When a tzaddik gives a promise, there is no second guessing. We know this is going to be, that's it. When Hashem himself gives a promise to Yaakov, and he tells him, you are going to be fine, no one is going to harm you, it's definite. There is no question. So when the person is reading, when we're reading the Torah story, later, and we read, Vayava Yaakov Shalem, that Yaakov came complete to the city of Shechem, we right away wonder, why does the Torah have to tell us that Yaakov came complete, and he was whole, and he wasn't harmed by Lavan and Esav? Of course, God told him. So why does the Torah have to tell us explicitly that this is what happened? By Avram Avinu, when Hashem sent Avram on his journey, Lech Lecha Me'aretzecha, Me'ladetcha, over there too, Rashi says that Hashem had to give him specific blessings, because there was a danger that Yaakov might lose certain things. He would lose that Avram, that he would maybe his Rashi says that when you go on the way, it can minimize your money and your name, his fame, and it can jeopardize his chances of having children. So Hashem had to promise him that you will not lose out. With all these things, you won't lose anything. Okay. We don't find anywhere that the Torah tells us that these promises were fulfilled. I mean, we see they were fulfilled. When we read the story about Avram Avinu, we know they were fulfilled. We know they were fulfilled for two reasons. First of all, God promised. Secondly, the story itself tells us that Avram's fame spread all over the world. He had children, which he didn't have before, and he became a very wealthy person. But the same thing is about Yaakov. We have God's promise to Yaakov. So why does the Torah have to tell us? And if we see from the story that he was saved. He was saved from Lavan and Esav. The Torah doesn't say any extra words. Why is the Torah saying, Vayava Yaakov Shalem? That he came complete. Therefore, this forces us, forced Rashi to comment and say that there must be something more that the Pasuk is telling us. There's something about Yaakov, certain dangers, certain aspects where he was challenged, which would not be included in God's promise of protection. This would not be part of that insurance policy that he had. It's not covered in the policy. These were separate things. And that's why Hashem had, the verse says, that in regards to that, even though it was not included in what Hashem promised, Yaakov came untouched, unaffected. And Rashi says three things. The first thing is that Yaakov was healed from the injury that he had when he was wrestling with the angel. Now, the wrestling with the angel is something that did not come upon Yaakov as a result of Yaakov's journey to Chutz La'aretz, the outside of the land. It's not one of the things that Yaakov was worried about. His fight against the Malach, the angel was an agent sent by God in order to fight with Yaakov, in order to engage him in a wrestling thing. It's not something that came about because of Yaakov's journey to outside of Israel into the darkness of Haran. That wasn't a threat. It was came directly from Hashem. For whatever reason, maybe God wanted that Yaakov that the angel should consent to the blessings. Because in the end he consented. Yaakov, so to speak, stole the blessings. And we needed that Esav and the angel of Esav should agree that it belongs to Yaakov. And that's why Hashem orchestrated this fight between him and the angel. For whatever reason it was. It was something that was sent by God. That was not included in God's promise that he's going to be protected. Just like, for instance, an insurance policy. You're taking a policy on your house. So you're protected from what? From the natural disasters of fire and flooding and things. Terrorism, that's not included. That's an external thing that might happen. You can buy that too, but it's not naturally part of the policy. In our case too, Yaakov has protection of the normal things that might happen when he's out there. But that he will encounter an angelic being, that he will encounter a being, someone from another planet that will come fight with him, that wasn't part of the protection. So the verse has to say that even though that wasn't part of the protection, Vayoveh Yaakov Shalem, Yaakov was complete, that he wasn't harmed. It was beyond Hashem's promise to him. Nevertheless, even though he was harmed, he was healed. Then when he got to Shechem, it was gone. He was completely healed from his injury. The second thing is, Yaakov had to spend a lot of money in the bribery, which he sent to bribe Esau. Now when he was going down, God promised him, I will provide for you. Hashem provided for Yaakov. Providing for him means I will take care of your needs. I will give you bread, as Yaakov asks God there. I will provide you with parnasa, with bread, with clothing, with all the basic necessities of life. God kept his promise tenfold. Or more than that. Yaakov not only survived and didn't die of starvation, but he was very prosperous. As the pasuk says, Vayifretz ish mo'oid mo'oid, he became a millionaire. He was very wealthy. True, he had to give a gift for Esau. The gift that he sent to Esau took a bite out of his possessions, out of his wealth. But it was still only a part of his wealth. Even after Yaakov sent that gift, he was still a wealthy man. So God's promise to him wasn't compromised by that gift. So we would think, okay, that he lost it. So the Torah is saying that no. That even that, which was not included in the promise, which is above and beyond the promise, even that amount of money and that chunk of his possessions that he gave to Esau, that too came back to him. He didn't lose it. And then thirdly, Shalom b'Torasei, Yaakov remained complete in his Torah. This does not mean that Yaakov wasn't impacted or affected by the unholiness and the immorality of Laban. That was part of, so to speak, we mentioned before, part of God's policy of the insurance that Hashem had gave him. The protection plan that Hashem gave him would include that Yaakov wouldn't be spiritually impaired or affected by the darkness of Haran. Yaakov prayed for it. As it says in Parshas Vayetzeh, Rashi says, the Shafti b'sholem, I should return in peace, I should not learn from the ways of Laban. That's not what we mean when Rashi says he remained complete in his Torah and he did not forget anything in the house of Lavan. What Rashi means that he didn't forget in the house of Lavan means simple. For 20 years, Yaakov was preoccupied tending the flocks of Lavan. For 20 years, he did not have time to study. He couldn't study because he was busy. Because every moment he spent doing his job faithfully, as mentioned last week, he was the most loyal employee. Serving his employer with every ounce of his strength. So his mind was preoccupied. He couldn't study Torah. Nevertheless, Yaakov didn't forget anything. Even though he couldn't study, he didn't forget anything from the Torah. Now that's not included in Hashem's promise. Why? Because then that has nothing to do with Yaakov being in outside of the land of Israel, in this exile. If Yaakov would have to work for a living in Eretz Yisrael, if Yaakov would have to provide for his family, he would have to start a business. He would have to do farm work. He would have to be a shepherd or whatever it is that he did. He wouldn't either be able to study. It wasn't, this is not a particular situation that's growing out of Yaakov descending, running away from Esau. It's not coming from that. It's a separate thing. So, Yaakov could have lost it. Pasuk says no. Even that, which again was not covered in Hashem's promise, Yaakov didn't forget anything of the Torah that he studied. We know that the deeds of the fathers and the actions of the fathers is a lesson to the children. And that it's, everything that happened in the lives of the fathers was a symbol, a sign, and an empowerment for us and our work. The 20 torturous, exhausting years in the life of Yaakov, when he was outside of the land of Israel, represent the close to 2 millennia of our bitter exile that has yet to come to an end. And when we take a look at Yaakov, we see that it was literally every experience, every challenge that the Jewish people have in this long gullus is something that Yaakov experienced in his own, in his exile. And we look what happened. The first thing was Yaakov is fleeing and running from his brother's sword. He's escaping. On the way, the enemy is laying an ambush. He's attacked by Eliphaz, the son of Esav, who robs him from everything, leaves him penniless, strips him from his clothing, nothing. Yaakov is left without anything. As he says this week in the parsha, ki b'makli avarti esayarden, as all he had was a stick left as he crossed the Jordan River. Then he comes to Uncle Lavan's house and he tries to set himself up over there. And again, he is swindled, he is schemed, he is deceived. He's robbed again and again and again. Then finally he comes out from Lavan's house and he goes back to the land of Israel and he's faced with Esav. Esav's wrath, Esav's armies. And Yaakov again has to spend a fortune to bribe Esav, that he shouldn't harm him. Then, he continues with a long, or before that, in the midst of all of that, a long all-night brawl with this, with the angel of darkness, with the angel of Esav. And Yaakov sustains a painful injury as a result of this fight. This is the story of the Jewish people. The story of a nation that for the last 2,000 years, we've been on the go. We've been running from country to country. If we weren't running, if we weren't going because we wanted to go, then we were driven out from country. Whether it was we were driven out of Spain, whether it was England, whether it was France, whether it was all the other countries that expelled the Jews. And when we left from country to country, we were attacked. There were those who were waiting and attacked the Jewish people and robbed them and took everything away from us. And when we came to new countries and settled in the different lands, again, we were swindled. We were taken advantage of. Jews were taxed, enormously taxed. And they had to pay a fee for everything. Just to put their head down overnight on a pillow they had to pay for. Every single thing in their lives was taxed. To do business, they needed a license. They had to pay extra taxes. Constantly, we were robbed from all that we had. And then, how many times Jews in our history needed to pay huge bribes, sums of money, to the kings, to the lords, to the governors, to the counts, to the, as we know them, as the Peretzes of the day of the olden times, just to be able to, just that they should stay alive, just like our father Yaakov. And then, the long, bitter night and struggle with the forces of darkness, wrestling, and the injuries that were sustained. So this is the story of the Jewish people. Just like Yaakov comes out from this darkest period of life, not only isn't he harmed, Not only isn't he affected, not only isn't he injured, but Yaakov comes out triumphantly. And these were the most enriching and prosperous years of his life. It was in this time that Yaakov established a family. It was in this time, precisely in this time, that Yaakov became prosperous. And he made all the fortune and his wealth. So too the Jewish people. As a result of this bitter, long, and exile, we emerge, we will emerge unharmed. We will emerge richer, wealthier, with all the spiritual wealth and all the physical wealth that will come from this long and difficult exile. In Tehillim, David HaMelech compares the Golus to a sleep. It says, "Bishuv Hashem Shiva Siyon," when Hashem is going to return, the exiles of Zion, the exiles of Tzion, the Jewish people, when we're going to return to the land of Israel, "Hayinu kecholmim," we will find ourselves like dreamers awaking from a nightmare, awaking from a deep sleep. Just like when we look when a person is sleeping. When a person is sleeping, their body is in a very dysfunctional state. True, the lungs are still breathing, the heart is still pumping, the digestive system might be working better when a person is asleep, but the higher faculties of the soul are impaired, aren't functioning. The vision is completely shut down. The person is oblivious to the sounds, to the conversations that are going on around them. Their mind isn't functioning. So that all that there is just a little bit of brain activity that's responsible for dreams. And in the dreams, what do we dream? We dream absurd things. We dream impossibilities. We dream contradictions. Things that make no sense whatsoever. And then, when we wake up from the sleep, suddenly the dream disappears. It's gone. What is left? What is left after the dream, after the sleep? So even though externally, of course, the sleep seems to be a disconnection of body and soul, a separation, but on a deeper level, when a person is asleep, this separation and this disconnect is only serving as a preparation for a fusion, for a deeper connection of body and soul. When you wake up in the morning, you're refreshed, you're rejuvenated, your mind is clear and sharp, and the emergence of the body and the neshama is so much stronger. Person is completely recharged and rejuvenated as a result of the sleep. When the Jewish people in this long and difficult exile, it says that God is compared to the soul and the world is the body. And the words of the Medrash, "Ma haneshama mamale esaguf," just like the soul fills the body, "Kacha kodesh baruch hu mamale esa'olam," so too God fills the world. And just like, because Hashem is the life force in the world, when we're in exile, then there is a disconnect. The higher powers aren't working. We don't see God, we don't hear Him. Our minds are in the dark. Our hearts are numb. Our spiritual powers, our spiritual resources are suppressed. There is great darkness. What we see is contradictions. We look in the world and we see things that make no sense whatsoever. It seems like Hashem has abandoned the creation. Hashem has abandoned the world and left it to the forces of evil, to the forces of nature, where the survival of the fittest, where the stronger ones prevail. We see things that don't make any sense at all. The wicked are prospering, the righteous are suffering. Hashem's one and only child, the Jewish people, are being so persecuted. Hashem's wife, we're sometimes compared to the wife, is being abused. It's terrible gullus. As the world is sleeping in this great cosmic sleep, and Hashem retracts, we are experiencing the nightmare. To us, this is horrific. It's a hellish nightmare that doesn't end. So absurd And there is the pain, there is the suffering, there is the losses, there is the persecutions. Very soon Mashiach will come, and the sun will rise for the Jewish people. And we're going to wake up from the sleep. And suddenly, the entire gullus, all the pain, all the suffering, is going to dissipate, is going to disappear. The only thing left at the end of the gullus, the Torah tells us, is going to be an enhanced, refreshed, rejuvenated Jew. A connection to God, as the connection of body and soul is strengthened as a result of sleep. Our connection to Hashem is going to be so much deeper and greater. The only memory of the gullus is going to be the positive elements of it. The new connection, the deeper resources, the deeper faith that was discovered in the challenges and the difficulties of the persecutions and of the hardships, and the tremendous wealth that the Jewish people amassed as they were amongst the nations of the world. And that is what the verse is telling us. Vayova Yaakov Shalem Yerushchem, that Yaakov comes complete. It's true, of course, the Golus, the Gentile, doesn't have any control to harm the Jew, because God promised us. God promised us in the Torah many times, we would be protected. But then, there are certain things that are not part of the policy. Certain things which are not part of this protection. And therefore, the verse is telling us that even in those things that we might think are just a matter that we can't help, this is definitely going to take a toll on the Jewish people in these three particular areas, and this is not God's promise to us. The verse says, and no matter that, even that, the Jewish people come out unharmed and unaffected by the gullus. The first thing, and the most obvious effect of this exile, is the effect that the exile has on the body of the Jew. Yaakov, when he was fighting with the Malach, got a physical injury. And the Medrash tells us the physical injury that Yaakov got to his hip is representing the Doirei Shel Shmad. It's referring to the generations of persecution. Doirei Shel Shmad usually is referring to the times of the Roman persecutions, when the Roman savages were brutally torturing our people and trying to force the Jew away from Yiddishkeit, away from Torah and Mitzvahs. And as Nachmanides writes this week, that it wasn't only during the generation of the Romans, but in our blood-soaked history, we have the times of the persecutions of the Crusaders. We have the pogroms of Khmelnytsky. We have the Spanish Inquisition. Again and again and again, we experience the worst suffering. And the question obviously is, can the Gentile, Can the non-Jew have so much power to harm us, to inflict so much pain and suffering? And the answer is, of course not. The damage to Yaakov did not come from Esav. The actual harm that Yaakov got came from the angel of Esav, which was an agent sent by Hashem for whatever reason. In the case of the Jewish people, God sent the angel of Esav to intimidate, to persecute, to hurt the Jewish people again and again for whatever reason. One of them being that as a result of all these challenges, as a result of these persecutions, we discovered a faith. We discovered the rock-solid faith of our neshama. We unearthed the infinite reservoirs of emunah. God tested us to the limits, and we went beyond the limits of faith. Jews gave everything. They gave their lives, they gave their wealth, they gave their families. Every single thing they gave up for Hashem. All this was revealed as a result of all that persecution. As a result of all that, it brought out the depth of the commitment, the unbreakable spirit of the Jew through thousands of years of martyrdom. Today's Jews are deep, infinitely deeper than the Jews that were in the time of the days of light. The days of the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews who lived in the days of the Holy Temple. The Jews who lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert. They were very rich Jews. Very rich. They have such great knowledge, Torah knowledge. They had such a wealth and a richness of emotion in their love of Hashem and their awe of Hashem. It was very, very colorful. Their Judaism was colorful, but it wasn't deep. Our generation today, who is living after thousands of years of persecution, we are the descendants of generation and generation that has been tested again and again and again. We have a rock solid. We've uncovered what was by then in potential has now been realized. Jews today are much deeper in their Yiddishkeit. Firmer, strong. All this faith came as a result of these challenges. So we might think when Mashiach will come and we will look back at a history of our this long and bitter history of the Jewish people, we'll recognize the tremendous gain that we've got. Look how deeply connected. Look how the Jews survived all of this and remained loyal to God. But it cost us. It cost us the millions that perished. It cost us the thousands of people that were harmed and gave their lives throughout history. So the Torah says, no. Vayavda Yaakov Shalem. It's a dream. It looks so real. Those who died, those who were taken away from us, it felt so real, so painful. When Mashiach will come, we will awake from a dream. Every single Jew will be there. Even the Jews whose even the remnants of their bodies were destroyed. Even those Jews will be there. The resurrection will encompass all Yidden. Even those who went up in the flames of the Inquisition or in the crematoriums of Auschwitz. Everybody is going to be there because Yovei Yaakov Shalem, nothing. The physical injury won't be a trace of it. Only the enriched depth of our connection to Hashem. That's what we're going to remain with. That's going to be the memory that is going to be with us. The rest of it will disappear completely. But Galus is not just a time when our spiritual selves is challenged. It's not just here to test how deeply Jewish we are. Galus is here as an opportunity. We go around the world and our job is to elevate the creation, to bring the entire world into the godly fold, to uncover the sparks of holiness. We're treasure hunters. We are sent all over the world in order to take the very darkness itself, the very elements that seem to be so mundane, so secular, so unholy, so ungodly. And these things need to be brought into a relationship. How do we uncover the sparks of godliness that are in the world? As the Arizal says, the Kabbalists teach us that there is a spark of holiness in everything which constitutes its soul, which constitutes the divine will, that object should exist. But it's concealed and it's hidden. So for that, the Jewish people, as mentioned in last week's class and so many other classes, were scattered all over the world. So we can reach the far-flung corners of the earth. And we can elevate when a Jew utilizes an object, a force, a cultural phenomenon. When we use the languages of the world, when we speak Torah in English, in French, in Russian, in Japanese. We take all these elements in this world and elevate them to holiness. Taking the wealth of the nations. Like when the Jews went out of Egypt, we went out rich. We will take the wealth of the nations. We know that those sparks come from a very high place. It's very enriching. However, in order to get those sparks, it involves an investment, a tremendous investment, an investment of time, an investment of energy, an investment of all of our resources. Why? Because a Jew is a spiritual being. A Jew really should spend all of his day studying Torah. A Jew should spend all of his time in fervent prayer, developing his spiritual powers of his neshama. That's what we should be doing. On the other hand, as we mentioned last week, most of the people, most of the time, are involved in physical pursuits and earning a living. But that's the only way we retrieve the sparks. We have to get in, we have to get involved. We get involved in all corners of the world and every aspect of life. So we utilize all these things and then we bring it back. When a Jew makes money and he gives tzedakah, or when he uses the substances and the elements in the world for holiness, we elevate all of creation. When we speak, when we come into contact with the peoples around the world, and some of our faith, some of our kindness and generosity and goodness rubs off on the rest of the world. That's how we elevate the rest of the creation. But for that, it's a tremendous investment. We have to give of ourselves, give away. And we think, well, it's worth it. You're putting out. In the end, there will be a great return. In the end, there will be so much. But what we lost, we lost. What a waste of time. What a waste of talent. What a waste of all those moments that we could have been davening. We could have been developing ourselves spiritually. Instead, we were so immersed in all these material things. And all this, in the world of darkness. In the world of unholiness. So the Torah says to us, no. Not only is it worth it. Not only will you gain in the end. And what you lost, you lost. You won't lose a dime, not a nickel, not a penny. Every single moment, every single element collectively that the Jewish people expended, that the Jewish people invested and seemingly compromised, seemingly gave up in this long gullus when we were on our divine mission, something that we don't need. We're not in this exile for our sake. We didn't do this for us. This is because of our humility. This is because of our dedication. This is because of our devotion. This is because we love God so much and we will be ready to go through all this so that He can have His desire of this world being a home for Him. So God says, you do this all for me, I promise you, you won't lose a thing. When Mashiach comes, we don't know how, but we will find that that everything, all of our energies that we invested is there. Nothing was lost. It's all there with us. Everything that we put into the gullus comes with us, and nothing was lost. Yaakov comes back, shalom b'mamoinai, with his money. Yaakov too went to the house of Lavan. He had to expend. See, Yaakov, when he was in the house of Lavan, spent of his mind. Instead of studying Torah, he spent with the sheep of Lavan. He took of his money, and he had to bribe Esav. He didn't avoid Esav. He didn't transcend Esav. He didn't destroy Esav. He didn't run away from him. What did he do? He worked with Esav. He sent him a bribe to get that Esav himself should agree to keep Yaakov alive. He dealt with the world and spent on it. It costed him so much. He comes back to Eretz Yisrael. He wakes up from the dream. He didn't lose a thing. He sees he has all the wealth, not only what he didn't lose anything from when he left, he has so much more. He's so enriched and prospered so much during the time of exile. And then last, the third and perhaps greatest challenge to the Jewish people during this long exile is, what's with the spirituality of the Jew? What's with the holiness, the godliness of the Jew? What's with, for 1,500 years, we, God's people, were in the land of Israel, on and off. But we were land initially, close to 1,500 years, and we were absorbing holiness. We were studying in the greatest amongst, in the yeshiva, some with the greatest sages. We were mingling with prophets. We went to the holy temple whenever we wanted, or at least three times a year. And we experienced the intimacy, the closeness with God. And then, so we soaked up so much Kedusha, so much greatness. And then God dispersed us amongst the nations, 2,000 years of darkness, 2,000 years of restlessness, 2,000 years of intimidation, 2,000 years when we don't have a moment of peace, of running from place to place. What is going to happen with all that Torah knowledge? What chance does the Torah have to survive in such circumstances, when the people of the Torah, the people of the book, are scattered all over the world? Definitely, by all projections, by all predictions, we're definitely going to forget. Our memory is going to be wiped clean. Nothing is going to remain. How is it possible that Jews are going to maintain the Torah in these difficult circumstances, in the most challenging circumstances, in the world of such chaos, and the world of such madness? The most astonishing thing, not only didn't the Torah disappear in the last 2,000 years, but the Torah grew and was enhanced. Can you imagine? When was the Talmud written? When was the Talmud made? In the midst, the Mishnah and the Talmud was written in the midst of the Roman cruelty and the Roman brutality. In the midst of all that, that's where Rabbi Akiva would read the stories. And these very people developed us a Torah like we have today. The greatest commentary on the Talmud is the Tosfos. The most brilliant writings on the, that was in the midst of the era of the Crusades. That was right in the midst of the worst persecutions that the Jewish people ever encountered. And when we read the Tosfos, every day Jews are studying it, there is no trace in the Tosfos of all that craziness. There's no trace of their suffering. There's no trace. We read about it in the Kinnis of Tisha B'Av once a year. The rest of the time we're studying, we're learning, don't see about it, don't know about it. Who would have ever known that this was written by people that were running from the sword of Esav, who didn't have a moment of peace? How? How is this possible? And throughout our long gullus, again and again, how do you have a Torah develop like this? It makes no sense. It can't be. And the answer is, Vayove Yaakov Shalem. Yaakov comes complete. Hasn't forgotten anything from the Torah that he studied. 20 years when he couldn't learn. 20 years when he couldn't study. 20 years when he was distracted. Yaakov comes back. Nothing has been forgotten from him. The spiritual light of the Jewish people, maybe at times it looks like it's concealed, it looks like it's extinguished. It's not extinguished. It's there. Our memory is complete. Nothing has been forgotten. And in this area, even more than in the other two. Because the first two elements in Yaakov's life, the bodily injury, and this that he invested of his money and of his resources, that he lost. He didn't lose it. That he temporarily had a loss. And then Hashem gave it back to him. In the end, he got back his money. In the end, he was healed. However, the third, the Torah of Yaakov, Rashi says he never forgot. It remained with him all the time. And the same is with the Jewish people. In this long exile, true, we've sustained, at least externally, harm, physical harm, and suffering. Unspeakable suffering. We did lose so much that we had to invest in this gullus. Hashem is going to give it all back to us when Mashiach comes, and we're going to see that in truth we were never harmed. But the third part, which is our neshama, our soul remains aloof from the entire exile. When God sent the Jewish people into gullus, God sent our bodies into the exile. Hashem never sent our soul. In matters of our soul, in matters of our neshama, the Gentile world has no say, have no power over the spirituality of a Jew. And over here, it's within our power. True, certain things that we have no control over, certain things we're impacted by the darkness, certain things that affect us. But if we want, just like we see by Yaakov Avinu, that we can maintain, even now, even before Mashiach comes, even during the time of exile, the darkness of the gullus doesn't have to ruin, doesn't have to affect our neshama. In terms of our spiritual selves, we can shine. We can remain with all the knowledge. We can remain with all the spiritual wealth and resource and light that our souls had way back then. It's possible for us to have now, and very soon, when Mashiach will come momentarily, when the sun is going to, as it says by Yaakov, Yizrach lo yashemesh, when the sun is going to rise, we will turn around. We will look back at this gullus. We will say, thank you, Hashem, oitcha Hashem, as it says, the Navi says, ki anaftabi. On the one hand, we cry, admasai. We can't wait even one moment longer. But on the other hand, we will see and we will recognize that despite all that darkness and despite all that we've been through, the Jewish people are standing proud. They're standing tall, enriched, invigorated, rejuvenated, and we're ready to go on into a much deeper relationship with God, with joy, happiness, forever and ever, for all of time.
צריכים להכיר את זה. לה לה לה.